Reading text 26 from Canto 3, chapter 15. Nice verse. This is still Brahma speaking to the demigods, and he's now again focused on the experience of the four Kumaras. He went from this little nice ecstatic expression of how wonderful these topics are, how fortunate it is to have these topics, how unfortunate it is when one is attracted to other things. How, what great misfortune. Now he's back to their experience. The four Kumaras are about to come to the gates of Vaikuntha, entering through the next verses, entering through the seven gates of Vaikuntha. And so he's, this verse is like a summary of the many other verses preceding. So, thus the great sages, Sanaka, Sanatana, Sananda, and Sanat Kumar, upon reaching the above-mentioned Vaikuntha in the spiritual world, by dint of their mystic yoga performance, perceived unprecedented happiness. They found that the spiritual sky was illuminated by highly decorated airplanes, piloted by the best devotees of Vaikuntha, and was predominated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Personality of Godhead is one without a second. He is above everyone. No one is equal to him, nor is anyone greater than him. Therefore, he is described as Vishva Guru. He is the prime living entity of the entire material and spiritual creation, and is Bhuvanaika Vandiyam, the only worshipable personality in the three worlds. The airplanes in the spiritual sky are self-illuminated and are piloted by great devotees of the Lord. In other words, in the Vaikuntha planets, there's no scarcity of the things which are available in the material world. They are available. But they are more valuable because they are spiritual and therefore eternal and blissful. The sages felt an unprecedented happiness because Vaikuntha was not predominated by an ordinary man. Yay. The Vaikuntha planets are predominated by expansions of Krishna, who are differently named as Madhusudana, Madhava, Narayana, Pradyumna, etc. These transcendental planets are worshipable because the Personality of Godhead personally rules them. It is said here that the sages reached the transcendental spiritual sky by dint of their mystic power. That is the perfection of the yoga system, the breathing exercises and disciplines to keep health in proper order are not the ultimate goals of yoga perfection. The yoga system, as generally understood, is Ashtanga Yoga or Siddhi, eightfold perfection in yoga. By dint of perfection in yoga, one can become one can become lighter than the lightest and heavier than the heaviest. One can go wherever he likes, and one can achieve opulences as he likes. There are eight such perfections. The rishis, the four Kumaras, reached Vaikuntha by becoming lighter than the lightest, and thus passing over the space of the material world. Modern mechanical vehicles are unsuccessful because they cannot go to the highest region of the material creation, and they certainly cannot enter the spiritual sky. But by perfection of the yoga system, one not only can travel through the material space, but he can surpass material space and enter the spiritual sky. We learned this fact also from an incident concerning Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish. It is understood that in 1 year, Durvasa Muni traveled everywhere and went into the spiritual sky to meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana. By present standards, scientists calculate that if one could travel at the speed of light, it would take 40,000 years to reach the highest planet of the material world. But the yoga system can carry one without limitation or difficulty. The word yoga maya is used in this verse. Yoga maya balina vaikuntham. The transcendental happiness exhibited in the spiritual world and all other spiritual manifestations there are made possible by the influence of yoga maya, the internal potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Can we do something? This thing is sagging. Like, how about this? Very nice verse, very nice purport. The way Prabhupada has laid out the purport is just taking the terms from the verse and one by one pointing forward. So the first terms that he's pointing to are, it's in the first line, Vishva Guru. What does Vishva mean?
Universe.
Universe. So he's the Lord of Vaikuntha, which is not within this universe. So the nomenclature Vishva Guru is with reference to where we are, and he's not where we are, or His abode is not where we are. His abode is the spiritual world. But within this material world, Vishva, he's the principal personality. He's the guru of all gurus within this universe. A Vishva Guru. And the way the Prabhupada has presented it in the purport is also the spiritual planets. He's the prime living entity in the entire material and spiritual creation. So he's Vishva Guru. Known by us as Vishva Guru, at least. He's the predominating personality. And therefore also Bhuvana Eka Ishvara. Actually, Bhuvana Eka Vandyam. Vandyam means worshipable. So he's worshipable. Bhuvana Eka. Of all the planets. Whether you go in the spiritual world or the material world, he's worshipable. He is the worshipable one. So that's the first line. Vishva Guru Adikritam. Adikritam, predominated. The Vaikuntha realm is predominated by that person. And then, so the next line, therefore it's worshipable. The place is worshipable. The contrasting position is nationalism. The place where one is born is worshipable. My last visit to China, there was during they have a national holiday, like we have our 4th of July. So when, you know, Mao was successful to get rid of the whatever the previous government was, they have a national holiday, celebrate it. And it goes for a whole week. The people work 360 days of the year, but they have national holidays to celebrate Mao. And they're, you know, the national socialist government or something. And just before that happened, there was this issue over some uninhabitable island off the coast of China, and, you know, Japan and China were, you know, puffing their chest out over those useless islands. So all over the country, there was a zillion flags, like, yay, China, boo, Japan. And it's not just China, it happens anywhere. There's some issue between one country and the other country, and yay, our country. So, according to the Bhagavatam, those who have that mentality can consider their place of birth to be worshipable. What does the Bhagavatam say? They're no better than a hog or an ass. So here the Bhagavatam contrastingly that Vaikuntha realm is worshipable because it's inhabited by or it's predominated by Adikritam Vishvaguru. He's the predominating person. And he's worshipable anywhere in the spiritual material world. So people are happy being in Vaikuntha. Their blissfulness is, we don't have an ordinary person ruling us. So that's pretty unique. The head of everything, the head of the land or the planet is God, and everyone is happily obedient to the will of God. Whew. And a whole other topic is the ideal situation in this world is the king is the representative of God, and being so qualified by their spiritual attainment, their spiritual consciousness, they rule like Ram Raja, they rule under the authority of the personality of Godhead. That's the ideal. Not only the rule is there, but the other notion of the ideas by which one rules, or the models or the concepts or the principles, because governments established by men, whether they're whatever the ism or even, you know, the mundane sense of monarchy or capitalism or communism or socialism or whatever the ism, they're man-made, assuming they're not that which is directly coming from Scripture, from God. It's man-made, so it's fallible, and so the people are, it's just, the starting point is wrong, and so it's not going to be happiness. What to do? That's a big topic. The Bhagavatam certainly recognizes the dilemma and the direction of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and those who are following the Bhagavatam, those who are teaching the Bhagavatam, trying to mold their lives according to its message, have as a initial step, priority, is creating through training and education first-class men, means Brahmana Vaishnavas, who can then, with knowledge and vision, give some direction. Not necessarily become the head of state, but give direction to those who are in the position of head of state. Or to educate people in general, since the modern system is by vote, so educate the people in general. But how are the people in general going to, they're not going to have the capacity to understand? That's not the Vedic model, is that everybody understands the same thing that the Brahmanas understand. At least the principle of God consciousness and the respect for Brahminical culture. So part of the merit of, or the ability to attain respect for Brahminical culture is having qualified Brahmanas. So that's our initial project, becoming qualified Brahmanas. Brahmana Vaishnavas. Brahmanas who understand the personality of Godhead and live their lives accordingly and set example in the various situations of life, in the social arena and the all aspects of life, in the place of occupation, showing by example, and in an ongoing fashion cultivating the qualities of a first-class person, sama dhamma tapaksho cham, etc. Jnanam, vijnanam, understanding and practical application of that understanding, and continuing to cultivate that for the purpose of satisfying the personality of Godhead, showing by example, and in that way becoming qualified to give, at least by example, or by example and precept, give, this is the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Live it and present it. And if some, even if there are pages of quotes where Prabhupada explicitly says, it's not expected that all persons will become Krishna conscious, but if some percentage, sometimes he gave 10% and other percentages, that's a huge part of the population, became Krishna conscious, then the world would be Krishna conscious. Just this morning I was hearing Prabhupada say this standard of Brahminical culture. He said, even if, say, 50% in the mode of goodness, then one can have an inkling of the personality of Godhead. You can do, you know, the God. But without that, in the name of God or the name of religion, it's pretense. It's misleading. It's cheating. So this is the point I want to emphasize, is our solution to the dilemma is become examples. Become situated in the quality of goodness through the process of elevation, of shravanam, kirtanam, and try to understand, come to the point of understanding Krishna, to the capacity a tiny living entity can understand the unlimited. How the limited can understand the unlimited is limited, but to our capacity, become qualified That's our service assignment, our job description. Become qualified. Brahmana Vaishnavas. And through our actions and through our speech to represent that teaching. And that's very powerful. The four Kumaras, it says, that they experienced an unprecedented happiness. Where is that in the Sanskrit? Apu param mudam apurvam. Mudam is happiness. Param mudam, the highest happiness. Apurvam is unprecedented. So that when they, it was just by entering into that realm, they experience something just by being in contact with that realm. It's something, not the same thing, but it's something like what people say that visit our temples for the first time, that kind of experience. And it happens a lot. After a program, at a temple Sunday program, and somebody brings up, you know, I met so-and-so, or I brought my friend from work, and this is their first time. So I like to ask them, you know, give me an honest answer. What's your experience? And, you know, it's commonly two things. Well, it's really different. You know, culturally, it's very different. But, you know, there's a joy, there's a happiness that's very attractive. Now, we're immersed in it. So we're you know, maybe we're not feeling so joyful or something like that. But you know, in contrast to what the material circumstances are, the process of worshiping Krishna is very joyful. But to speak of the realm of Vaikuntha, because you know the temple president is God. Or as during Ram's rule, everyone was very happy because God was ruling Ram Raja, and people pining for, once again, let us have Ram Raja. And you know, Without Ram, you don't have Ram Raja. Without having Ram Bhaktas, you're not going to have Ram Raja. He'll be attracted to be present where his devotees are gathering. And so, to attract the personality of Godhead by our Krishna consciousness. Anyway, it's the joyfulness of the process of devotional service has to do with the predominating position of the personality of Godhead in our lives. To the degree that we can factually achieve that, we'll experience that unprecedented happiness. I'm thinking of this because we had our GBC meeting in Tirupati. There's this very large hall, the main temple hall, and the deities are, like many temples, up raised platform, and then the altar, and then up higher the deities, and there's Radha Govinda and Ashtasakis. And to have Radha Govinda and the Ashtasakis and Govardhan Shila in Tirupati, where the mood is Aishvarya, it's you know, Goloka within Vaikuntha. And the process of worship, while the process of worship of Balaji is also Krishna, but the mood is Aishvarya, and it's very powerful. But the mood of Madhurya is unprecedented happiness. So I've heard Revati Rama describe on a couple of occasions what the experience was when he invited the, whatever his title is, the head, the chief priest and organizer, not just like from the TTD, but as a priestly position, but his administrative position. So he was invited to preside over their installation of Radha Govinda and the inauguration of the new temple. And devotees had come from all over India. It was huge turnout, some thousands. And the kirtan, that chief priest and head organizer experiencing the kirtans, it was just going on endlessly. It wasn't mild, it was very joyful kirtan. And, you know, thousands of people from all walks of life, you know, many of whom are from India, but many of whom were from other places, Russia and other place, parts of the world. Just, you know, well-educated person jubilantly dancing like peacocks and for hours. And the mood of joy and mirth just moved the priest to speak publicly and say what these people are accomplishing. It goes way beyond anything that we're able to do. And the essence of it is the holy name, and chanting congregationally the holy name. It carries one, it transports one beyond worldly existence. So, while we have this very powerful process, you know, we are still clinging to or stuck to, you know, this world. But fortunate for us, we have this very powerful process, because where would it be otherwise? But the potency is certainly there, and the experience of the potency by the Kumaras was unprecedented happiness. The way the Sanskrit is laid out is that it was made possible on the strength of yogamaya balena, which is what Prabhupada says at the end of the purport, yogamaya balena vaikuntham, the transcendental happiness exhibited in the spiritual world, and all other spiritual manifestations there are made possible by the influence of yogamaya. But wherever the Lord is, his yogamaya is, and wherever the yogamaya is, there's this unprecedented blissfulness if one can contact yogamaya. So the wish of the devotee is to be under the care of the internal potency. And by being in the care of the internal potency, one leaves behind the influence of the external potency. Unprecedented happiness. Now, two other things. Going back a little bit from the earlier verses, how the four Kumaras were situated. They were situated in Brahman realization. They had Brahmananda, the happiness of Brahman realization, the happiness of this position of neutrality. And in the position of neutrality, they traveled wherever they wished without having a desire to fulfill, which is not normal. We do things because we have something to fulfill, and so we go here or go there, do this or do that. So what's it like to to do something where you don't have a purpose to fulfill. Like, devotees have a purpose to fulfill, besides, you know, some material thing. We want to serve Krishna. What moves a Brahman-realized person from point A to point B? It's mysterious. And in addition, just exploring. And in addition, here Prabhupada is connecting the power by which they were able to move. He takes this yogamaya balina and connects it with how they were able to move about. And he goes into it by mystic power, balina. But mystic power is very clearly described in Nectar Devotion as something that's material. It's a material perfection that one can try by mechanical means, or one can try by subtle means. And the subtle means is just manipulation of material laws by subtle means. So one can become light or become heavy, one can whatever the mystic opulence is, by manipulation of laws of nature that are done in a subtle way by some power that one achieves. So it's just material. It's on, mystic cities are on the material platform. And there isn't something here in the Sanskrit that speaks about mystic power. It's just yogamaya balena munaya tad ato vaikuntam. So Prabhupada has taken that. The yogamaya balina is applied to the bliss of the Vaikuntha realm, and without saying so, he also connects it to how the Kumaras were able to move about. We're a little tired this morning because it was late at night last night and not so much sleep. How much sleep did you get? About 3.5-4 hours? Huh?
6 hours.
Really? Sanchi Kumar?
Five.
Okay. You're struggling too a little bit. Good luck at work. Behind... there are Sanskrit terms for spiritual opulences, distinct from them are material opulences. The material opulences are called vibhutis. 11th chapter, 10th chapter Bhagavad Gita, Vibhuti Yoga. They're reflections of the spiritual opulences, or but sparks of Krishna's splendor. And that's the position of Paramatma. He is the sustainer of all things of this world. He's behind any material opulence. So here's this mystic city by which Ambarish Maharaj traveled and by which the Kumaras traveled. And behind it is the personality of Godhead. So although they weren't Paramatma realized or Bhagavan realized, they knew mystic power, same as Durvas Muni, not Bhagavan realized for sure. But mystic powers do come from the Supersoul. So one who approaches this Ashtanga Yoga, mystic city, or to do anything of some extraordinary power, behind it is the personality of Godhead. So in that way, on the strength of their mastery of Ashtanga Yoga and the process of mysticism, the spiritual potency. Otherwise, how can one go to Vaikuntha? Spiritual potency must be there. One may be able to do something of this world, but carrying that further into entering into the Vaikuntha realm, the transcendental realm. It's not possible. It's not possible by manipulation of material laws in a subtle way, which is what mysticism is. It's just a material thing, manipulation of a material thing in a subtle way. It gets some mystic power, inconceivable power. But it's a material power. Entering into the Vaikuntha realm isn't just by manipulation of material laws in a subtle way. So they were gifted. That's how it comes. They were gifted with that capacity for a purpose of the Lord, for the purpose of performing a lila. So they were involved in his yogamaya potency to perform a lila with him or be part of one of his lilas. So they didn't, as the rest of the story goes, you know, they didn't right away enter Vaikuntha. They were at the gates of Vaikuntha, but even get to the gates of Vaikuntha, my goodness, that's not just a material power. So by that agency, they were transported. By that agency, they were able to experience unprecedented happiness. By the agency of Yogamaya, this unprecedented happiness was the nature of the place. And the nature of the place was like that because the personality of Godhead is predominating. And anyone who is in that atmosphere experiences unprecedented happiness. And their view of the personality of Godhead is, as described here, Vishvaguru. The teacher of the universe, the supreme personality of Godhead, and worthy of being worshipped. Bhuvana Eka Vandiyam. The worshipable personality, and not just, you know, dutiful, but ecstatic. Dutiful means I need purification, at least. I must perform my duty out of duty. I'm obliged. And here in Vaikuntha realm, it's not just obliged. Like Prabhupada makes this contrast with our chanting. Chanting because we're obliged. And chanting because there's taste. And chanting because their taste is not moved by obligation, it's moved by experience of something. So here, the entrance into the Vaikuntha realm is on that platform. And Brahma is describing all of this to the demigods and appreciating the good fortune of his sons, who have achieved something that he, as his own words, even he and the demigods are wishing to attain and aspire for, the contact with the Vaikuntha realm. All good fortune to the four Kumaras. So now we're going to hear, starting this evening, we're going to hear about the exchange with the Jaya Vijay. Hey, you can't come in. You're not qualified. Okay, so any discussion?
I was thinking about the familiarity, I'm trying to not cultivated. I mean, it was the opposite side of like trying to strengthen faith in the process, like faith in the worship I'm doing. But it was like somewhere the familiarity is going on. I'm just wanting to ask like some ways I can overcome that familiarity.
Are you thinking of is this question arising from the topic, or it's just not?
One thing is like I was having a thought, and also like to stay Krishna conscious, to be observed in Krishna, to progress more in Krishna consciousness.
I think you know the answer, but I'll say it anyways. In short, respect is the antidote. When one goes into a temple, or when one is designing a temple, the deities in a temple are raised and distant, because the persons who are approaching the deity should not be so close, because if they're so close, it may seem, you know, we're on the same platform, or so traditionally and purposefully the deity is at a distance and the deity is elevated. It creates, just by physical arrangements, a position of distance and looking up. Even, you know, just not only tilting the head, but they're in this exalted position. Worldly, this is done. Like, say, you know, a judge sits on the high court bench. So, and when the judge comes into the courtroom, the court sergeant of arms says, "Everyone stand." And if you don't stand, you can be put in jail. It's not like just a courtesy, it's a law. Because without respect for the judge, how is one going to accept the conclusion of the judge? So the judge has to be qualified, but that's, you know, that's, there's a system for establishing respect. And, you know, so the president comes and, you know, there's like a press conference and everybody, you know. So then they can take their seats. But it's an invaded culture. When someone enters, that's a respectable person, it's a cultured person stands, minimally. You know, then and otherwise is offering obeisances or other forms of... So that's to... That respect is to diminish the familiarity part. It's good if there's some external exhibition, but the external exhibition doesn't do anything if there isn't some internal. I mean, part of the thing with people that come to our temples and they don't want to pay obeisances is it's pride. And not just Western people, you know, they don't want to pay obeisances. Or they do one of those. They just reach like, you know, that's, what is that? But, you know, so it's specific in the language of Pakirasamrita Sindhu, that one dandavats, or there's some other term that where it's like on 5 points. You know, the head goes down and the hand goes, both hands and both legs go down. Kind of obeisances. Some term that speaks like that. When coming before the deity or respectable person. So, the form can be diverse. The essence is respect. So, with some distance and placed in a elevated position, at least within one's mind, minimally.
Small clarity. How about with PA devotees, Guru Maharaj?
What?
With the devotees, like PA devotees, like how to not get familiar with the devotees.
I've given the answer. Respect. Don't enter into that familiarity territory by the protection of respect, and exercise respect. Make practical demonstrations of that internally and externally. Something else? You had your hand? Yes.
I heard during the class that you were telling the wish of the devotee is to be under the influence of internal potency, and by that one avoids the other. How should we cultivate or nourish the desire or wish to be under the internal potency of the soul?
And then you say how to? By doing it. Excuse me for responding this way, but Prabhupada's response, you've heard this before, how does one become sincere? By being sincere. And everyone knows what sincerity is, and so you practice it, you cultivate it. And so by practicing it, cultivating it. That's how. And then the manifestations are diverse, but it's the spirit of aspiring for. And then as you aspire for, you'll see the things that are entanglements or attachments that are holding you back, and then you continue to aspire for, and chindanti kovidas tasya. You apply the sharp sword of bhakti, the knowledge and detachment, and continue to aspire. You are involved in medical field by career. So you know, I'm sure by training as well as by experience, one of the things that helps in wellness is people having a desire to be well. And persons that are depressed or miserable or smashed or, you know, in the mode of ignorance, it's hard to heal them. And persons that have an eagerness, a strong determination to become well, and, you know, the healing process works better. Yes? Yes. So it's the cultivation part is at the heart of it. And that is stronger than any conditioning. So how to is you cultivate and associate with those who have that spirit. The iron rod and the fire example. And then your husband's question of, you know, okay, but then there's familiarity. So exercise respect. That's everything is already there. The how-to is already there. It's in your hand. Use it. Cultivate it carefully. And not just the mechanical parts, but, you know, the behaviors, but, you know, the spirit, from the heart, the intention behind the activity. Cultivate that. Pay attention there in the intention part. What is the purpose behind this? Like the person that's in your medical care, what's the purpose behind this? It's to get well. I don't like to suffer. I want to be able to function, you know, to do the things I like to do in a normal fashion. I don't want to be in a hospital bed. I want to become well. So that's, you know, okay, you want to become well. That's really good. Take the medicine. Follow this regimen. Well, how do I know it's going to get me well? You know, because anyway, the confidence in the patient, in the healing capacity of the physician, is another component of their wellness. It's part of the bedside manner of a physician that they can connect with the patient, not just that, you know, they take the medicine, but they feel confidence in the physician in the process of becoming well. Something else? You have something? Yes?
Like, when we go out book distribution, like typically we approach people,
yeah,
and we tell books on yoga and meditation helps you get over.
That's fine. Yeah, fine.
And we give it to them, they look at it, they look through a different thing, and then they ask, isn't this religion? So how to appropriately approach it?
The best lines of how to speak to people in book distribution, I'm not in close touch with. I'm sure there are like a dozen or so different responses that the experienced book distributors can draw upon because of their experience, and Krishna inspires them what to say in different circumstances. I don't have a quick answer for that. Write to Vaisheshika Prabhu and his team and find out what, you know, when people say this, what are the half a dozen things that are options I could draw upon? And sometimes it's the spontaneous response that's the best one, meaning, you know, like somebody says, well, what's your religion? Like, you know, one of the things to do that help people get over some issue is show some light upon what they hold to be true. So let them say what's true. You know, what is your religion? And then they say, well, my religion is da-da-da-da. So that's fantastic. And then, wow, they're just, you recognized, and now they're empowered. This speaks of principles, not this isn't, that isn't, or whatever. Because the journey of any individual throughout the course of life is to come to that position. This is very ancient wisdom on those same principles that apply for this religion, that religion, the other religion. Depends on the person. And you know, Krishna can give you the intelligence or dance on your tongue and have you say the right things. If you're praying very seriously and wishing to be the instrument of Krishna to help this person make connection with Krishna. Because most likely, most commonly, their conception of what is religion is rooted in the body. So how to get them out of the body to the soul platform. So, you know, let me ask you a question. You know, do you believe in the soul? It's like, you know, take their attention from their issue to something that there can be some connection, and they can connect. Well, so fantastic. To tell me what you have as an understanding of the soul. And then here's some thoughts that are presented in this book about the position of the soul. I think you'll find it very interesting. You're a religious person. I'm sure you'll find it very interesting. This is discussion about the position of the soul. It's very fascinating. Now here, let me show you. Okay, I'm going to end. I'd like to end. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.